It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, another great podcast, and we have the usual suspects. We have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, David?
Another great night with you, my friend, and so same thing for Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
What's going on, guys? Just watching a little bit of the Duke-Pitt game with Riley.
All right, enjoying the basketball game and doing a podcast at the same time, right?
Yep. No Pirate basketball to watch tonight as we're recording this on Tuesday night. So, of course, tomorrow night we'll be watching the Pirates and the Cougars.
That's going to be great, and that's going to be at Houston. And we have Sam Raz of the Scott Holman podcast. We have him later in the show. In fact, what can we say? An excellent show. What adjective do you want to use, Kyle? We'll change the adjective each time.
Tremendous.
Tremendous show. All right, there you go. Tremendous show. And we have the very first guest, by the way, guys. We have a one-on-one with the director of athletics, John Gilbert. And we've got some breaking news, so we'll save that for that interview, and we'll talk about that afterwards. And also, we have, towards the end of the show, we'll have Kevin Williams, last but not least. He's excellent and, of course, a graduate of ECU and did a great job with the men's team, came back, and has done an excellent job with the women's team. Right, Bubba? For women's golf?
Yeah, he really is. So Kevin Williams is somebody that's been associated with the ECU golf, be it the men's or women's program, for more than two decades. So he's done an excellent job with that program. That's a program that's been to 12 regionals in 18 seasons.
And he's the one that started the women's program, if my memory serves me right. We'll be talking to him later on. But first, we've got to do our roundtable. Lots to talk about. And where do you guys want to start? There's so much to talk about, I don't even know where to start. Always when we're doing this podcast, we have enough to talk about with the roundtable, but one thing, let's start with the baseball team. They actually got another preseason poll. I don't know if you guys saw in Baseball America, number 11. So they're 11th in the preseason poll. Not that that matters a lot, but it's a lot of bragging rights, I guess, for the fans, right?
The folks in Baseball America put us at number 11. Yeah. I don't know if they cleared it with their ACC people there in the Durham area before they put us there, but that's good. Baseball America is always one of the more noted polls. They really don't matter, like you said, but it is one of the more noted and talked about polls. Yeah. So it's good to get the respect.
It is, and I know Bubba, Kyle, Bubba and I were talking about earlier in the afternoon about all the different polls, and let's see, D1 baseball had us at 11, right, Bubba? Is that right?
Yeah, D1 baseball had us at 11th, Perfect Game had us at 11th, and obviously Baseball America, as we just said, had us at 12th, and then you have collegiate baseball. What are we? Are we 15th, 18th, maybe even 20th? 20th?
Nope.
No, we're 35th. Makes sense.
Yeah,
clearly collegiate baseball is the garbage toilet paper butt wipe of baseball polls.
They came out earlier.
I think collegiate baseball is, I think that publication's out of Arizona.
West
Coast bias there. So, yeah, maybe they can check out that series at UCLA.
Sounds good to me. By the way, speaking of baseball, get your baseball banquet tickets. Kyle's going with me, I know. That's coming up Saturday, February 9th. And they're going to have a really big time, actually, at the new Student Center. I can't wait to go there. And, Kyle, you're going to be with me, right?
Yeah.
Wear your sweater, button, my friend. You got to dress
where
up.
Wear my sweater. Did you clear it with Tom?
No. It's all good.
Leaving LaGrange to go to the city.
He'll have a sweater vest and a pair of pants on.
I normally don't wear pants. So that'll be a nice change up.
I was talking about compared to jeans. But,
He's gonna get slickered up like Jethro Bodine.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
Get your tickets at ecupirates.com or 1-800-DIAL-ECU. You can get the banquet tickets. So it's a really great time. And I know they have autograph sessions starting at 5. They've got a silent auction, a whole bunch of stuff. All the money for the baseball banquet will go to the baseball program. So that's going to be awesome.
Now, with that silent auction, is the rumor, sir, are we going to auction off a date with Bubba?
No, because I don't know that they, I don't know how much they would make so much money on it. I don't know if they can get away with doing that. So.
Okay. Well,
Bubba, if he were not married, he'd be on The Bachelor. So.
I give Stacy permission to use our money to bid on me.
All right, there you go. It's going for a good cause.
Yeah, as long as it's going. Yeah, as long as it's going to a cause like what it is.
Yes,
no doubt. By the way, football wise, don't forget. I want to invite everybody. April 13th is the spring game. And every podcast, as many as I can, I'm going to remind everybody, save the date, Saturday, April 13th, that afternoon, and that's going to be the spring game. Let's go out. I'm inviting all the Pirate football players, former players, and current players, obviously, are going to be there. But the former players, I want them there in attendance. So come on out, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's free. How many times do you have something with ECU that's free? So come on out.
David, do you reckon the current players are going to be there?
I know. I'm joking. That was a joke. So.
Yeah.
I want to make you laugh. Did I do a good job there?
Yeah, you did great. You did. You got it.
Okay. All right. I was trying to make a joke, and there you go. Anyway, that's another big date coming up for Kyle, Bubba, and I is Wednesday, February 6th. What is that, Kyle?
For football. National Signing Day.
It's the real signing day. It's the real signing day, not the one. And don't get me started on that. I'm not going to go off on that. I'm actually in a really good mood, so. Hey, by the way, Kyle, you're a budget guy. Did you hear about UConn?
Yeah. And again,
you're Mr. UConn. So always talking about we need to cut 50 sports to keep, you know, to be competitive with UConn.
Actually, you just made my point for me, David. Who has the most sports in the American Athletic Conference? Why? Why it's UConn. They fund the most sports of any school in the American, and they're $40 million in debt.
Is that because of sports, or is that because they did not? They were frivolous with their spending?
Well, six of one, half a dozen of the other. I mean, they're frivolous with their spending. It could be because they're funding too many sports. They were funding that many sports when they were in a BCS conference. They're no longer in a BCS conference anymore, and they're still spending like they are. Also, basketball hasn't brought in. Basketball's their big revenue.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem they have is we have the problem with football. They have a problem with basketball right now that they're trying to fix. So that's the issue. And
that's part of the issue. I mean, it depends on who you're trying to catch. I mean, UConn can get their budget fixed to compete in the American, but if they have aspirations of competing nationally, they're going to have to do more than UConn. $40 million in debt is insane. I don't know how you fix that. We're not talking about $1 million, $2 million. We're talking about $40 million, and
yeah,
I honestly don't know how you fix that. There's of course speculation they're going to drop down to FCS and football. I don't know that would be a bad idea for them. I think that their fan base would be happier playing in the Big East. I know that that they're a state school, and I know that those schools in the current Big East are private Catholic universities, but historically, those are the schools that UConn have played. They're geographically, the Providences, the Seton Hall, Georgetown's, so on and so forth, Villanova. That's the schools that UConn has history with, and I really think their fans would probably be happier in that conference and playing FCS in football. I don't know. I think it's going to depend. I think that decision, I could be wrong. We're not UConn fans. I could be wrong, but I think that their decision is going to lie a lot on what the TV deal brings. I think if the TV deal can, when it gets renegotiated here in the next couple of months with the American, if it can get, if we can get between, I don't know, if we can edge up between 6 and 10 million, I think Connecticut would probably stay put. I think if it's in that 4 to 5 million range, I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped FCS and football, go to the Big East for everything else.
Hey, Bubba, can we get Alex on the line? Maybe he covers
the story. You read my mind, Dave. That's what the Pirates are going to be traveling to UConn for men's basketball on February the 3rd. So Alex Putterman will be talking to him about that. We'll have to certainly address this as well.
No doubt about it. And we were talking about football with signing day. We had the spring game. We talked about that. I know that the football team was a part of a big thing, Bubba, you wanted to talk about on campus with other student athletes, right?
Yeah, the football team, baseball, and then also women's tennis, I believe it was, and they helped package 25,000 meals yesterday. So that was awfully good.
Where did those meals go, Bubba?
I'll have to I can't remember the exact calls.
Okay. We'll
come back to that. I'll let Bubba, our research team of Bubba, on that on the stuff, we'll come back to that for sure. Hey, guys, why don't we go ahead and go to we've got a lot to talk about with the after the John Gilbert interview. I talked to him actually today. Had a chance to have a phone interview with him. Let's go to that interview right now. Very happy to have our guest here. In fact, he's done a great job being in Greenville for about a month and a half or so, and that is, of course, the director of athletics for East Carolina University, John Gilbert. John, thanks for coming on the show with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I wanted to say that first and foremost before we start the interview. I was at the Temple game last week, and I was telling folks I was sitting in my seats and with my mom and my son and daughter, and I saw you shaking hands and being there for the fans, and it really meant a lot. I've been sharing that with folks. That's the new athletic director we have in Greenville at ECU.
Well, I appreciate that. That's really, number one, it's who I am. And I also feel like the position that I'm in, I think it's important at a school like East Carolina that I'm visible and accessible to our fan base.
And you've done a great job of that. I want to get your thoughts. Have you had a chance the last time we talked to you? I know that you had been sleeping in various places throughout, the month of December, and things were a little crazy and hectic. What are your thoughts so far on Greenville? Have you had a chance to really breathe and kind of gather things and find out what's going on in the town?
Well, number one, I can tell you the community has been unbelievable. I mean, far exceeded my expectations. Greenville is as advertised. It's got to be the friendliest community, or certainly one of them, that I've ever lived in. People have just been so warm and genuine with my family. It's been really special. So still in temporary housing. I hope in the next couple weeks we'll be able to get in the house full time and get settled, but it has been a wonderful transition.
Well, I know there's a lot of realtors listening right now. They can call John Gilbert, right, to help you find a house in Greenville?
Yes, they can. Well, actually, I have found one. We're working on closing on it.
Awesome. Awesome. I know that I know it's nice, and we've got a lot of great realtors here in Greenville and in Pitt County and the surrounding area. Wanted to ask you about one thing that comes to mind is I know last week you had a I think it was from the helm, a letter that went out on ECUPirates.com. A lot of praise. A lot of people have been very pleased with that from Pirate Nation, I know. And I just want to get your thoughts on that. Is that something that's going to be a regular thing for Pirate Nation, for the fans?
It will be regular. And I do feel certainly that communicating with our fan base and our constituents and making sure they know what's going on, what we're working on, it is an important thing, and you can't over-communicate. So I want to make sure that we do a good job from a communication standpoint.
And in my eyes, and a lot of people, I know it's been A-plus so far, and I know that's going to continue in the future. As far as scheduling concerns, I know that the issue with Virginia Tech, we're not going to get into the negatives of that, but I wanted to ask you, I know that the games there at Virginia Tech are still on the schedule. Are those games that we are going to continue to play in the future for football?
Well, the most important thing for me right now is securing a game for next season.
Right.
If you look at the calendar, Literally, we are a few months from playing football. And so I think, number one, it's important to secure an opponent. It will be an FCS opponent. So still working through that. Want to make sure it's an opponent that all our fans are at least familiar with from a name recognition standpoint, and hope to have that out in the next week to 10 days.
And I know that the rules go that we would have to, so that means we'd have to win 7 games to go to a bowl for 2019?
That is correct.
Okay, so it's an unfortunate thing. It's kind of like you're not the president of the United States, but it's kind of like the president always inherits things that have not been caused by you, and it's something unfortunate that you've had to deal with, but I guess that's part of the job. As far as any other, I guess that's in priority number one, any progress on UNC on the schedule, I guess that's going to be on the back burner until you can get this handled with the FCS team.
Yeah, I haven't looked, too distant on football scheduling. I'm really trying to get this reconciled first, because it is of the highest priority. We need to get our season tickets out and renewals. So securing this opponent and bringing that to a contract is the utmost importance.
By the way, that was going to ask that. As far as season tickets this year, will the season tickets be cheaper now that Virginia Tech's not on the schedule?
I like to look at things, a lot from a common sense standpoint. So yes, obviously you can't charge, a ticket price what you would have for that opponent versus an FCS opponent. And we recognize that, and we'll make a change accordingly.
One of the things I've been very happy with, I think you were part of, is back in the holiday break when the students were not here for basketball, speaking of tickets, the $5 tickets for the lower bowl where the students normally sit and they were out was a brilliant idea. Is that something we can expect as far as discounted tickets in the future for the rest of the basketball season?
Well, I think it's certainly something, we do want to be really good at engaging our fan base. We also certainly want to make, fiscal responsible decisions.
Right.
And I think when we can make decisions like that, where we can offer a discounted ticket to get people there, we should be looking at those things. So we will continue to explore those and when the timing, is correct.
I wanted to ask you, as far as I know that the spring game is coming up April 13th. Is there anything special this year that we're going to do? I've been inviting personally. I want to see a lot of not only Pirate fans there, but also former football players. I've been personally inviting them as if it's my party, but I really want them to be there too. I've been very pleased with Mike Houston and his staff and coaches taking over the program and just really running with things.
Well, I'm certainly thrilled that Coach Houston is here. He brought a great staff with him. Both guys that have been at James Madison and other places. So I feel really good about our staff. I am looking at all things around our spring game, and it's important. I think the Pirate Fest is going on that weekend as well.
Right.
And so I think it will be good for us to partner with the city. The number one thing we want to do is get as many people here as we can for that event. It's a big recruiting weekend. It's important that those kids, those recruits, and our current team see how important football is to this community.
No doubt about it, and hopefully fans will. I want to remind fans, any kind of tickets you can get at ECUPirates.com for sure. Sorry about
that. Yeah, the spring game will be a free game, so
right.
Obviously want them to come in and see what's new.
Right, and for certainly that for season tickets, I know for baseball and softball, and certainly for football in the fall, we'd love for people to go ahead and make that commitment for sure. One of the things I was excited about, too, is in that letter you were talking about you've had time in Greenville and that you're going on tour around North Carolina to various places. I know that people listen all throughout North Carolina beyond. There are certain dates that you have out for that or certain events that people can be looking out for?
Well, right now I don't have any public events. What I've been going around to these different communities and getting, you know, a group of people together to have breakfast or lunch, okay, and individual visits. We are working on, obviously, our Armada dates that will be more public in nature. But I've been a lot of great places. You know, I've been to Washington. I've been to New Bern. I've been, you know, I was down in Wilmington and some communities around Wilmington. I'm going back out into this week to a bunch of different communities in eastern North Carolina. So I think it's important to get out and be visible. And once we get some more public events, certainly we'll get that out to Pirate Nation.
Well, I know it's still basketball season going on as far as women's basketball. I know that would technically be your first, second hire because Mike Houston's your first hire. But is there a timetable? I would think it would have to be after basketball season. Is there a timetable for the women's basketball coach being hired?
No timetable, although I would say obviously it will get more in tune and deliberate as we get towards the end of the season. So obviously, you know, we'll cast a wide net and make sure we find the right person for that job.
One of the things I know the other, as far as the athletics are concerned, are there things right now that you're looking at that maybe, I know, for example, one of the things that myself and a lot of the fans want is an indoor practice facility for football and maybe the other sports as well. Is that something that is in the near future, or is that something that's going to be a few years down the road?
Well, I would say this in general. There are several facility issues that we need to do pretty quickly. Some of them are a lot more attractive than others. There are several buildings and stadiums and venues that we need new roofs or waterproofing that are expensive and real dollars that we need to commit to. We need a new turf football practice field. It's a very dated turf that we have now. Our weight room needs updated significantly, both from a flooring and weight standpoint. And looking across to some other sports, some other fields and things that we need to allocate for. And really what I'm doing now is prioritizing what those needs are. Certainly an indoor building is very important. That's something that, you know, we'll engage an architect on, get a rendering for. And that's a building we're going to have to go out and fundraise for. We're going to need some people that help invest in something like that. To make a building like that real. But it is certainly important for the success of our football program.
Well, unfortunately, John, I don't have a rich uncle that could probably pony up like 20 or 30 million. I think that's probably the number it would be for that venue.
Well, maybe one of your listeners has interest and maybe they do have the resources. But it, like, honestly, a facility like that, it will take involvement from a lot of people. And a lot of giving levels will play a part to make that facility a reality.
And before we let you go, one final question. You've been generous with your time. Thank you so much. The Southside Project, is that something that's going to be in the summertime before that'll be completed, and I take it that we'll be able to tour it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at probably a May-June completion time frame, and we certainly will have a grand opening to, you know, let all the people see it, feel it and walk through it, because it really will, certainly as you drive up, if you're a player, recruit, one of our many generous fans that have helped support the project and or buy tickets, it passes the look test. I mean, it adds aesthetically to the look and feel of our stadium, and it's going to be a special place on Saturdays this fall.
It's great. We have a new coach, new coaching staff, new athletic director. a new addition to the stadium. That's kind of 2019 is looking bright. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for all that you're doing for Pirate Nation. It's been a real breath of fresh air. I know a lot of people around town, the man on the street, if you will, a lot of people have been really bragging about you. So I wanted to pass that along again. And thanks for your time and look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I'll come back anytime. Go Pooh.
Wow, what an interview with John Gilbert. I have to say again, very happy with him. Did you guys, when you listened to that interview, did you think, what was it like before John Gilbert? You couldn't get an answer, or not the answer, maybe that the candor of John Gilbert. He's so candid and open and honest, and I feel like he's very trustworthy. Very happy to have him in Greenville. What did y'all think?
I thought it was good. It was the getting the information that it's going to be an FCS opponent. I guess that's officially. I think we all figured it was going to be an FCS opponent, but I guess that's breaking news here on the Sports Objective that it's definitely going to be an FCS. And it's not his fault. It sucks that we're going to play two FCSs back to back, and we're going to open the stadium with the expansion of the stadium. The Southside Project with two FCS opponents.
It's supposed to be South Carolina. Let's do the math. It's supposed to be South Carolina and Virginia Tech, and we have Gardner Webb and a FCS team to be named later.
Yeah, it's a shame. But it is what it is. I would like to, you know, he said that he really hadn't looked ahead yet to those Virginia Tech games. Mr. Gilbert, if you're listening, the answer is we're not going to play them if they're not going to come here.
Well, I think I still think this is what I think. I think what's going to happen is, and I was nice to him on the interview because I didn't want to have to put him in a bad situation or be awkward. But I think Mr. Babcock is going to be fired at some point and will resign. And what's going to happen is we'll have an open dialogue.
Now, why are you thinking that? I mean, are you hearing something from Virginia Tech people? Or
there's Virginia Tech fans that are mad because they have to play. They have to win seven games as well instead of coming to Greenville and potentially kicking our butt. Let's say that I'm just saying.
Well, I know by Virginia Tech standards, coming off of a six-win season, if they're struggling to get bowl eligible, they're going to have bigger problems up there than missing a bowl game. They're maybe firing a coach.
That's true, too. I'm saying, like, if you think about it, if you could come here in Greenville, win a close game, or blow us out, it's actually better than to have the game at home, because now you've got a situation where you have to win seven games, and you might not win the seventh game, and you might not be in a bowl game again. So,
right. I don't.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and that's a bigger concern for us. I know they want. What I'm trying to say is, I really don't think they care about going after a 6-7 season. I don't think just getting into a bowl game is what they want. So I think 6-6. I think their fan base is going to be pretty pissed anyway. Whereas right now we'll be happy with 6-6 and be a little disappointed if we can't go to a bowl. Gilbert answered the question when you asked about us having to win seven to get to a bowl, and he said, you know, yes. That would be the case. According to Steven Igo at Hoist the Colors, he said that if he was told that if we have to end up scheduling an FCS, which is apparently we're going to have to, then we're going to petition, that we are going to petition the NCAA for a waiver of that rule.
Okay.
Now, will the NCAA grant us
that
waiver?
That's the reason why I went ahead.
Probably not.
That's why I went ahead and said what we know now.
Yeah,
that's what I said. Based on what, like, in other words, the waiver will be nice,
right,
but the way we've been screwed here lately, I'm not going to hold my breath.
I don't think they'll give it to us.
No.
I will say this about that 6-6 rule. There is a caveat to that, I believe. I'm almost 98% sure. If all 6-6 bowl teams are taken, or if we were to go 6-6, we would qualify before any 5-7 teams, even with
Yes,
I believe that is the case.
Okay.
Now, of course,
I was going to ask you guys off the air, but I forgot to ask about that.
I believe that is the case. Now, that's as much as people talk about there being too many bowl games. That's only happened one time that 5-7 teams have had to go to bowls. In fact, this year, 20 teams got left out of bowls, three or four. One of them is Southern Miss, oddly enough, where John Gilbert came from. So I don't know. It's a shame. The biggest thing to me isn't really that having to win seven thing. That is irritating. But, you know, depending on how we play, you may look at things and go, well, if it would have been Virginia Tech, we would have lost. You know, if we just skirt in and get the 6-6.
But maybe it'll give us momentum. Is that what you're saying? Give them momentum for October, November?
Correct. I mean, there's a chance if we find a way to beat NC State in Old Dominion. Old Dominion, by the way, guys, is putting together a nice staff up there. Bobby Wilder firing a bunch of people.
Yep.
And, he's hiring some good coaches. But anyway.
As far as that goes, we talked about David Blackwell being hired there as the new defense coordinator, but then also Derek Riley, who, of course, was part of Blackwell's defensive staff this past season.
Coach safeties, and they also hired Mike Houston's old O-line coach. He was at JMU with Houston up until this past year. Yes, this past year when Shane came in. I forgot where he left to go. Maryland, maybe. And, of course, the staff.
That's right. And that stuff didn't work out, yeah.
Staff was fired, and now he's the new O-line coach at Old Dominion. So some interesting that's going to be interesting. We're going to have Mike Houston's old O-line coach is going to be there, and our old defensive coordinator is going to be there. So that game –
And safeties, yeah.
Yeah, that game's lining up with some interesting dynamics. And also they also hired somebody that was on Virginia Tech staff, the coach under Bud Foster that was just fired. Old Dominion's put together a good staff. They're going to be that's not a game we need to take for granted. But anyway, the point is, if we can find a way to beat NC State with two FCS, potentially, you know, and again, not taking Old Dominion for granted, it could be 4-0.
Yeah, right,
or we could be 2-2. To be sure, we're going to beat the FCS opponents. We never lose to them.
We won't. Hey, we will not.
One thing I can guarantee you about Mike Houston, he knows how to beat FCS teams.
Oh, yes, sir. He will. He knows how to beat FBS teams as well.
yeah, he does. If you can classify us under Scotty Montgomery as FBS.
I think that's going to be I tell you, that might be, in a good way, a step to remember. And how cool would that be? Just let's be positive. It's 2019. You got a new athletic director, new coach, as I was saying, with John Gilbert. And you've got a whole bunch of, the staff is incredible that they're putting together at the athletic department and with Mike Houston. And you have the Southside Project opening up. 2019 is going to be really good. I really have
there may be some growing pains for football. I mean, you know, we're talking about 4-0. I mean, we could easily be 2-2.
Right.
I mean, we hadn't won a road game in a while now. We were terrible. We were one of the worst teams in America against statistically, offensively, and defensively this year.
Yep.
So we got a long ways to go in football to be competitive. So I don't want to put too much pressure on Houston in year one.
I don't want to put it on there, but I think that my point is, I'm not saying that I'm not delusional and think that we're going to win conference championships or anything like that. I'm saying I feel confident that we're going to be not only competitive, but games we probably shouldn't win based on where this program has been the last few years. Don't be surprised if the team is actually 7-5. I think there's a possibility that we could be 6-6, 7-5 without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. With two FCS teams on the slate, I think 6-6 is a real possibility. And look, if we get to 7-5 and get bowl eligible, I'm going to do crossbones.
All right. You want to do crossbones?
Yeah, I do.
No doubt.
All right.
Go Pirates.
All right. We've got a basketball game, and that's coming up. As a matter of fact, we're dropping the podcast this morning, so that means tonight the game is taking place at Houston. And I know, Bubba, we had a chance to talk to Sam Raz of the Scott Holman podcast, and let's talk to him right now. Great to have with us back on the podcast, Sam Raz from the Scott Holman podcast for Houston Sports, the Cougs. And I know, Bubba, we're excited to have him back, and I guess he's a regular on the show, right?
He is. The last time we spoke to Sam was when everything was going down with Coach Applewhite and the rumors of hiring Dana Holgorsen. Well, of course, that's happened. So we wanted to have him back on to discuss that, as well as ECU's basketball trip out to Houston on Wednesday night. And Sam, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be regular on y'all's podcast.
Absolutely. I always tell people, East Carolina fans, if you want to know what's going on, to listen to your podcast as well. And this is a great time to have you back because I know you guys had we had an early Christmas present. I guess you guys had a late Christmas present, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. With Dana Holgorsen getting hired on the 2nd of January, reported on New Year's Day, I think it was a good way for Cougar fans to start 2019.
And you said right before we started recording this interview, you said he's made some great hires for assistants, right?
Yeah, I think that was one thing Cougar fans were really going to watch closely. I think a lot of the talk around Holgorsen was, wow, this guy got, you know, a $4 million year salary and a 5-year deal. And that's all big stuff. That's almost unprecedented at the G5 level. But I think as importantly, he got a huge assistant pool that was, you know, over $4 million to hire, you know, the best staff he could. And I think that put some pressure on him to hire, you know, a good staff. And I think a lot of the hires he's made have been real exciting. He brought in two of West Virginia's best recruiters, their receivers coach, Tyron Carrier, who has taken the same job as Houston. Tyron Carrier, if you don't remember, was a Cougar wide receiver during the Conference USA days.
Absolutely.
Tied for the all-time record in punt returns for touchdowns, and Markel Blackwell, the West Virginia running backs coach, and he's going to be taking the quarterbacks coach and co-OC title at Houston. They poached some assistants from Power 5 schools, and I think the D.C. hire is real promising as well. I think that's going to be important as they really try to rebuild on that side of the ball after a pretty disastrously bad 2018.
Yeah, as far as Major Applewhite, is there anybody that's – I know we talked about it before. Are there people upset that he's gone? And I assume now that everybody's thrilled to have Dana Holgorsen.
I mean, if you want to include Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, I think Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports is pretty upset Major Applewhite went. But if you're asking, is anyone in the Houston fan base upset? No, I think the – firing of Applewhite for 2 years might seem quick. I think it was an admission by the powers that be at U of H that they messed that hire up, that they tried to go with a continuity hire, and they just promoted someone who really wasn't ready for the position. And also, let's be fair to Applewhite a little bit, didn't give him really the resources they were willing to give Holgorsen. I think obviously they were hesitant to give resources to someone who struggled in the ways Applewhite did, but I think that made them realize they can't half-butt this hire. They can't hope, you know, someone can do the same results that Tom Herman did on the cheap. I think one thing that people don't remember is right before Tom Herman took the job at the University of Texas, the University of Houston was willing to offer Tom Herman the same money they're paying Dana Holgorsen now. They're willing to offer him $4 million a year, increased assistant pool. And, you know, you're not going to get me to say very many nice things about Tom Herman on the record, but I think he rightly said that moving to the University of Texas wasn't about the money to him. And for once in his life, I'll believe Tom Herman on that. It was, you know, about the prestige of that job and, frankly, competing for a playoff spot that's not afforded to G5 teams at the moment. But I think everyone's ready to move on from Applewhite. I think, man, if you gave Major Applewhite truth serum right now, Major Applewhite is ready to move on from this job. It wasn't working for him, and even if he'd returned for a third year, it would have been pretty miserable for everyone concerned, including him.
We know all about that in Greenville, right, Bubba?
No doubt. We're definitely that's what we're, I guess, about 6 or 7 weeks into the John Gilbert era now, and as well as new head coach Mike Houston, and things haven't been positive or as positive in quite some time, no doubt. But
yeah.
Earlier, I was just going to ask Dave, Sam, you referenced the two coaches that are coming with Dana Holgorsen from West Virginia and how they're tremendous recruiters. And talk a little bit more about the other staff hires he's made. I know the defensive coordinator is coming over from Arkansas State. You mentioned that one. And then I saw earlier today Bruce Feldman put it out that the cornerbacks coach from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns, Zach Etheridge, who was a captain on Auburn's national title team back in 2010, that he's been hired, and he's someone who's recognized as the top recruiter in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, and he also brought in, kind of to segue off what you're saying, Blake Gideon, who was the cornerbacks coach at Georgia State, the Sun Belt, and Blake Gideon's somewhat familiar around these parts in Texas because he was a four-year starter at the University of Texas in Austin, but wasn't a big recruit, was a three-star guy who played over a bunch of blue-chip guys. So, you know, classic overachiever. You know, he's pretty promising. You mentioned correctly Joe Coffin, the Arkansas State defensive coordinator. He's also bringing his defensive line coach, Brian Early, who I'm really excited about. He coached, I want to say, almost double-figure all Sun Belt guys when he was there, just was constantly putting guys from his D-line in the all Sun Belt team. I think, you know, I'm very hesitant to go on, you know, what a fan base thinks about a coach and like weighting that heavier than, you know, all conference selections, you know, the things you can quantify. But I remember 2 years ago when Major Applewhite hired Mark D'Onofrio, our now former defensive coordinator, who was prominently at Miami fans were like, you know, my God, y'all, how can you hire this guy? This guy was terrible. This guy presided over our worst 4 or 5 year run of defense ever. Whereas Arkansas State fans are just like, oh man, we're real gutted to lose that guy. He's a real good one. Just wishing him luck in Houston and all that. And a few other guys, Brandon Jones, he had accepted the job as the offensive line coach at North Carolina under Mack Brown, previously coached at Texas Tech. He played there under Dana Holgorsen, actually, and Cal under Sonny Dykes. He's going to be the Cougars' co-offensive coordinator, O-line, and run game coordinator. I'm trying to go through it. Coffin's coaching linebackers. And I think one interesting thing that we didn't bring up yet, Holgorsen himself is going to be calling plays for the first time in a few years. You know, last year at West Virginia, he deferred to his OC, Jake Spavital, who actually just took the head coaching job at Texas State in the Sun Belt. So Dana is going to go back to calling plays, which for Cougar fans, we're very excited about that. We got 2 years of Dana calling plays in 2008, 2009. And you know, I really feel like play calling is one of those skills, you have it or you don't. I think you could be a good coach and not be a great play caller. I think Major Applewhite is a good quarterbacks coach, but he when he was OC at Houston, just wasn't clearly a very creative play caller, wasn't seeming like he was getting the best out of his guys. And you know, I think Dana Holgorsen's track record really speaks to what an incredible play caller he is.
As far as the expectations, I was telling somebody many years ago, they asked about A-Rod and baseball, and I said, well, the reason why Yankee fans, they have many titles in baseball to begin with, so there's always going to be the expectations to win the World Series. But when you pay somebody a lot of money, the expectations are even greater, like A-Rod. What are the expectations now paying Dana Holgorsen, having a huge assistant salaries for the assistants pool? What are the expectations this year for Cougar fans?
Yeah, I think Houston has become almost nationally famous for expectations, or I think outsized expectations. You know, or the quote from our chancellor at a Christmas party about we fire coaches are going 8-4 ain't going away. But I do think, weirdly enough, you know, the credibility of Holgorsen, the credibility of his staff has bought him at least a little more time than Major Applewhite had. I think there were people at the beginning that were willing to give Major a chance, but, you know, if people are being honest, no one was very thrilled about the hire. I just think some people were willing to buy into him. But, you know, when the losing started happening, I think everyone kind of, you know, went back to the default state of, really, we hired Major Applewhite, whereas Holgorsen, I think, comes in with a lot more credibility. And I think, at least in the short term, next year's schedule is going to be very tough. You open the season in Norman at Oklahoma. get Washington State at the Texan Stadium. And, you know, I know Washington State is losing a guy you're familiar with, Gardner Minshew. But, I, you know, if anyone can find a quarterback from nowhere, it's Mike Leach. And this Cougar program has struggled so much to defend the pass, I'm frankly quite worried about playing Washington State. And then a road trip to North Texas, who's been, you know, I think one of the best teams in CUSA the last couple of years, and a team that'll be highly motivated to take down a slightly bigger in-state, you know, a foe in Houston. So, I mean, I think it's going to be a bit of a rough landing at the beginning, and I think there was patience. But, yeah, in the long term, if Dana Holgorsen isn't winning 9 to 11 games and competing for an American Conference championship, I think there are going to be questions. I think if by year 3 and year 4 the program isn't consistently better than it was under Major Applewhite or Tony Levine, then questions are going to start being asked. And, you know, the thing about his big contract is it's going to force Cougar fans to be patient because Applewhite had a real small buyout. Dana Holgorsen, it's going to cost a lot of money to make him go away if it doesn't work out. So, you know, for better or worse, you're kind of married to him with this big deal.
One good thing about it is I think that everybody's going to be happy from the perspective of who the coach is, his reputation. People love him there. I think you guys made a solid, I mean, unbelievable hire. As far as money goes, is money no option when it comes to your budget? And as far as, I know a lot of people are talking about the Rockets owner being behind the scenes. East Carolina, we don't have the amount of millionaires that maybe some other programs have, or say we can write a blank check. Is that something you guys are going to be spending even more money than you have before?
You know, I think the big money spending is, I'm honestly surprised that Tilman Fertitta, you just mentioned, the chair of the Houston Board of Regents, the owner of the Houston Rockets, in addition to a bunch of other stuff here in the Houston area, I'm surprised he ponied up the money he did, because he just got done ponying up a fair amount of money for the new basketball arena. So, I mean, I think, will U of H keep spending to, you know, have, I think, great facilities and, you know, great coaches at all levels, even down to the Olympic sports? Sure, I believe they'll do that, but I don't know if we're going to have another move of the equivalent of Dana Holgorsen for a good while. I think one line that stood out to me from the press conference is, you know, Fertitta was the very first person to speak, and he said, hopefully this is the last one of these I have to do. You know, obviously right. Hoping that, you know, Ace is the Holgorsen hire and that we're not talking about the football coaching. You know, obviously nothing is forever, but that you're at least for the next 5 or 6 years, you've got this coach for better or for worse, and you're going to let him build. So I think really the big spending, to answer your question, is done. But, I mean, there's, you know, there's enough deep-pocketed people and high expectations here that I'll never say it's completely done.
You know, with us, when you're talking about scheduling, we have a situation with Virginia Tech, if you don't know about.
They totally backed out on y'all.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go there, but I was the only reason I brought that up is now we're trying to figure out, we're scrambling around. John Gilbert put out a letter last week, which is amazing if people haven't seen this on ecupirates.com, but it's great to have an athletic director again that's communicating. But anyway, the bottom line is we're hoping to have an FBS school, but if not, the last resort is to have FCS, because we already have the in-state FCS school, Gardner Webb, on the schedule, which means that with the rule you can only count one FCS, then we have to do that. So we're trying to – that's one of the things we're trying to do now. The scheduling is a lot easier than – the schedule is going to be easier. We have the reverse than normal, especially when you take Virginia Tech out of there. As far as the basketball team, you guys are doing very well under Kelvin Sampson. What do you think of? We talked to you before. It was a nice little run. I know that ended up with Temple, but how are things been going the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's been an incredible year so far. I think we had high expectations for the team among the Cougar fan base, but we were also realistic that you were losing a star player in Rob Gray, two or three much lower profile guys who were key role players on last year's team, and, you know, bringing in a talented recruiting class and stuff like that. But I think one of my favorite things about Sampson is he's not really a sunshine pumper. Like, he's going to tell it like it is. If he says something, you know, if he says this player is the best player I've seen you know, since that you'll fall out of your chair because he's just – he's pretty light on the superlative. He's an old-school guy. And he really – at the beginning of the season, he's like, I don't know if we're a great team yet. And a lot of Cougar fans were panicking. He's like, oh, no, like, are we going to go back to crawling, you know, just struggling to get to the NIT? And the team promptly won their first 16 games. So it's not as talented of an offensive team as last year because you lose a playmaker like Rob Gray, a guy who can create offense in so many different ways and makes the guys around him better. But in my opinion, it's been a much better defensive team. I think around the halfway point of last season, everything clicked for U of H and they figured it out defensively. And this year's team did indeed that halfway point. They've, you know, they got some decent matchups in the non-conference and won them. Got tested, I think. You know, it was a schedule friendly enough to allow a lot of new pieces to work their way into the rotation, but, you know, still manageable enough that, you know, still gives the Cougars some credibility in March when it comes time to look at the resume. And it's a very fun team to watch. There's not a lot of, like, real high NBA prospects in there. I think our two best senior guards, Corey Davis and Galen Robinson, aren't a centimeter over 6'1", if you measured them. They're both pretty small guys, just two guys who didn't have a lot of Division I offers out of high school, junkyard dogs, guys who play defense, and just really lunch-pail guys. I don't know if you remember, you know, it's going back a ways, but, you know, Samson's early to mid-2000s Oklahoma teams. You know, mm-hmm. teams that never had, like, superstar guys on, but would always inevitably be in the NCAA tournament and winning a bunch of games. And that's exactly what this Cougar team is, a team that does, you know, can occasionally shoot the three-pointers, rebounds real well, plays tough defense, does all the little things, but doesn't, you know, do a whole bunch of real flashy stuff. And I think the fan base has really responded well. And, you know, honestly, I said this a couple of years ago when we were still drawing, like, hundreds of people to games, that Kelvin Sampson is 100 times the coach that this school and this fan base deserve. I think we are quite fortunate that 11 years ago, the NCAA thought texting too much was a serious violation.
No doubt about it. When you think about it, Sam, I've said this before in the podcast and off the podcast, the basketball league is incredible. I forget all the different, you know, you start thinking about all the different great coaches. Like, pretty much every coach or every school has a great coach now in the American.
Sorry, you cut out.
I said pretty much, when you think about the American, pretty much every school has a great coach now in the basketball league.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You guys hiring Joe Dooley, I think it was a good one. USF hiring Brian Gregory, and, you know, 2 years after just the most nightmarish roster situation possible, they look like a good team. Really, other than Tulane, I think every team in this league has a good coach that's going to get that team in the right direction or has a good coach that currently has that team, you know, in the postseason. Yeah, guys like Mick Cronin, Fran Dunphy, and also, you know, I think guys who were just starting stuff like Joe Dooley and Brian Gregory, Johnny Dawkins at Central Florida, I think is going to probably get them in the tournament for the first time in forever. Yeah, it's a good league. We had Larry Brown a couple years ago. I always forget that. I was like, oh, yeah, Larry Brown, the guy who coached the NBA, was coaching in this league three seasons ago now. It's been a little while.
And Danny Hurley now this year at UConn.
Yeah, Danny Hurley at UConn, yeah.
So something I wanted to ask you about, Sam. Obviously, you have Davis Jr. and Brooks averaging 15.2 and 14.3 per game, respectively. So talk a little bit about them, but also I want you to touch on the depth of this team. That's something that really jumped out. You have, I'm assuming you've researched ECU a little bit. We're not exactly the deepest team. We only go about seven deep, if that, sometimes. So I noticed 9 Cougars playing at least 17 minutes, and then all 9 of those guys are averaging more than 3.5 rebounds per game, and 7 of them averaging more than 5.5 points a game.
Yeah, and just kind of to hit what you said, Rice said there, like, everybody on the court for this Cougar team, for their position, is a plus rebounder. Like, Samson absolutely insists on just drilling rebounding till it's just, like, part of this program's DNA. And I think that's one of my favorite things. And yeah, the two guys you mentioned, Corey Davis Jr., he was a JUCO guy, didn't really have any offers out of high school, played here actually for a local junior college, San Jacinto, and got a bunch of pretty good offers. It was us, it was down to us, LSU and Arizona. And, you know, when he chose us over LSU, who's basically his hometown team, because he's from that area of Louisiana, it was pretty exciting. It's like, all right, well, this guy may be pretty good. And I think since maybe his second or third Division I game, he's just, you know, taken to it so quickly. I realize junior college guys, you know, generally it's a quicker learning curve, but Corey Davis looked like he'd been playing junior or had been playing Division I ball for 3 years last year, his first year, you know, 10 or 11 games into his career. Just a good three-point shooter. I think one of the better three-point shooters I've ever seen, with a hand in his face, a junkyard dog defensively, a guy who is always going to draw, I think, the toughest guard matchup of any opposing team. Armani Brooks is a real interesting guy, wasn't a really highly recruited guy from the Austin area, and is really, like, he just went from being this little rail-thin kid who didn't look like he belonged on a Division I court to, in my opinion, one of, if not the best spot-up shooters in this league. Just a guy who really has one of the best verticals I've ever seen from a guard, and it can, I think, has figured out ways to score. And it's just a bunch of different ways. And I think I'll mention two guys who are a little bit more under the radar. Galen Robinson Jr., he's a four-year startup point guard. Don't want to overuse it, but real junkyard dog defensively. He's developed his offensive game. He can score it a little bit, but really at this point, more of a distributor, more of a guy who's looking to set his teammates rather than, you know, get his own shot. And, you know, a kid we brought in, Dejon Giroux, who was a top 50 recruit out of high school in New Orleans, went to UMass with one of his high school teammates, who he's actually with here at Houston now, Bryson Gresham, one of our backup bigs, who's pretty solid. But Giroux's real interesting because I think, you know, Corey Davis Jr. and Armani Brooks will work their butt off and try to get to the basket, but they're really not natural slashers. You could see it. They're more comfortable as spot-up shooters. They're not really great drive to the basket, but Giroux is, you know, he's 6'5", maybe 150 pounds, soaking wet, but just a guy who loves to attack the basket, a guy who relishes having the ball in his hand and taking, you know, opposing defenders one-on-one, and that's not really a skill set anyone else on this team has. And, you know, he had a combination of injury, was briefly suspended during the non-conference for some, you know, just off-the-court stuff, but since he's come back into the lineup, it's just been a revelation might be putting it mildly, just to have this guy off the bench who does something so different than anyone on the team. And at least in a couple games, it's kind of functioned as a jump start of the offense, if you will.
Sam, I want to ask you before I let you go, with Houston, I know this is a multi-bid league as far as American now, which is really cool to see three, maybe four teams get in. What kind of seed do you think? I know that it's still in January when recording this, and there's still February and obviously the conference tournament with American, but where do you see this team making as far as what kind of seed do you think they potentially could have in the big dance?
I think if I had to pin it down to one number right now, I would say they're a four seed. I've seen a lot of places putting them as a three seed. You know, U of H does still have to play Cincy twice, Central Florida twice. I think that's going to beat the Cougs up a little bit more, get some more losses on the tally, but yeah, well, I think it's all said and done. I think U of H will be a four seed, but I could see anywhere between three and a five seed, which, you know, after about a decade and a half, personally, of following U of H basketball, prior to that, of never seeing us get to the dance, really, in earnest, you know, I'll take anywhere between a three and a five seed. I'll just be happy to see, you know, the name Houston announced when, you know, on Sunday evening on CBS.
Well, imagine the last time that I saw East Carolina in the dance was when I was a sophomore in college at East Carolina, and it's a couple months before my 20th birthday. So it's been a long time, my friend.
They made a run in the CAA tournament, right?
They did. They did. Well, they were one of the first teams ever to have a losing record. I think it was 13-17, somewhere in that neighborhood, and made a huge run, and they beat Lefferts Gazelle's really good team with James Madison, the Dukes, that year in the CAA.
Nice.
And
yeah.
But anyway, it's been a long time. So when you said that, it'd be nice to hear us in the NIT.
Yeah.
I think that's a year or two away. But you were talking last time about us having 13 wins. I think that's more realistic than my 16 this year, but we'll take it. It's definitely the one thing I can tell you that for Coug fans that want to know, this East Carolina team has been playing a lot like Joe Dooley. They're playing with intensity, diving for loose balls. I know Kyle and Bubba have even said that it's more of an exciting team to watch than we've seen in probably about 5 years.
Yeah, I watched y'all's Memphis game, and obviously, you know, it's a kick in the teeth to lose on the road when you've been holding a lead for as long as you did. But, I mean, I just, you know, I compare that ECU team to the one that I feel like, quite honestly, I thought quit last year in Houston, and it's just night and day. Yeah, I think, obviously, you know, you guys got one scholarship senior and 10 underclassmen. I think Joe Dooley, is building for the long haul. And, yeah, no, I'd be real encouraged right now if I was an ECU fan. Obviously, the last thing you want to hear after just ages of rebuilding seasons is, yeah, this is another rebuilding season. But, you know, I think it was a good hire. And, yeah, just if they give him patience to build this team, I think ECU is going to be a difficult team. And I think for the first time forever, you know, I at least made a note of, okay, when are we playing in Greenville? Because, I mean, if ECU is good enough to beat Cincinnati, I think we're a better team than Cincinnati. But if they're going to beat Cincinnati, they're good enough to certainly beat us on a given night. So, and that's not something I've said about ECU basketball in right. many years. And that's just in year one of Joe Dooley. So
that's very fair. And the recruiting's been good. And certainly we look forward to the game on Wednesday night. Sam, I could talk to you for hours. You know that. Appreciate you coming on. And definitely, obviously, it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a closer game, maybe. We'll see how it turns out on Wednesday night. But definitely, if you're in Greenville, love to have you around, and we'll definitely catch up with you before the season's out, for sure.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, y'all.
That was fun talking to him, guys, because he actually talked a lot about, as you guys heard, about Daniel Holgorsen and about the assistant money. And, I mean, it just you want to talk about a team that wants to be, that's really fired up, and they really want to be in that, a power league, if you will. Houston is really cranking out. How long that can last, I don't know, with the dough. But we'll see about them. It might be another. You never know.
They better keep that dude happy. He whoever this guy is who's funding this.
Rockets.
They better keep him happy. that's a lot of cash for a somebody that doesn't have Power 5 money coming in to be spending.
And you better hope that he keeps – exactly. You better hope that he keeps spending that money. If not, then it could be tough times. But we like Sam a lot. He comes on all the time. And I appreciate – speaking of candor, I appreciate his candor and his honesty as well.
We've got another. Can you imagine the confusion when we play at Houston? And it's TD ECU Stadium with Coach Mike Houston for ECU. Good God.
Hey, don't get the ESPN guys. They'll screw it up.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Love you, ESPN, but every time we turn around, it's something wrong with
good old Eastern Carolina.
Hashtag yeah, Eastern Carolina.
Yeah.
No doubt.
E.Carolina.
E-Car.
I can't stand. I really not.
Oh,
rule. I can't stand E-Carolina.
Or E-Car, yeah, like he just like Bubba just said.
E-Caro.
E-Caro, yes, I've seen that one too.
I mean, that's where, to me, that's where I don't mind seeing ECU.
ECU, exactly.
That's where the whole argument that we've had about, you know, which has been crazy, is the branding, I understand, for the games. Just put up ECU up there, three letters, right?
Correct.
My problem is don't refer to, it's like you're having to, correct yourself. Oh, it's politically incorrect to say you know, Carolina now, so we've got to say ECU. So that's why I want to say, just put on the games ECU.
Yeah.
It's a nickname of ours. That's fine. I get it when it comes to graphics. It's easier to spell and understand and pronounce and all that ECU. But don't be doing that on letterhead and all that kind of stuff. It's very obnoxious.
Well, it's don't be forcing it down our throats. And,
right.
Like, to me, the ECU in the end zone looks so freaking stupid.
It's horrible.
Yeah. And that's something that was addressed recently with John Gilbert, and I think he and Ryan Robinson Ryan Robinson mentioned it in a recent interview on PRL or the Brian Baylitz Show. One, he was talking about how.
I missed that. What did he say?
He was just saying that they were going to be experimenting, looking at some different options for the end zones.
Okay, I got it.
Field decoration. So, like, maybe the our new Adidas pattern, you know, like we have on the side of the pants, which didn't look bad this year. That may be something that's incorporated into the field somewhere.
Spell East Carolina. It's not hard.
Yeah.
Pirates at one end, East Carolina. Come
just
on.
Put Pirates at both ends. It's fine. If Staten's still here come fall and he still insists that we're just ECU, then just put Pirates in both.
I got a great idea. I got a great idea for the end zone. I got it. I had a light bulb epiphany right here.
Beth, you want to put Beth in there?
No. What I want to put in there is we've got to figure it out, but I love Joey Perry, a future guest, hopefully on the show, on the podcast. But let's see if we can get on one end. We'll have the Pirates. On the other end, we'll have America's Next Great University. Can we spell that out?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I mean, if we're going for obnoxious, I mean, we might as well.
I think that's done. I actually think that's stupid.
What do you think? Don't you think we could get that on the end zone?
Yeah, America's Next Great University. That is so condescending. Oh God.
Yeah, I didn't mean to go take it off the rails. I thought that was I'm trying to.
But if he's still here and he means Satan, and he still insists that we're ECUs for the branding, then just put Pirates in both end zones.
Oh,
you know, for years. Back in your day, David, as you like to call it, the Peach Bowl era, you know, all through the 90s, had Pirates in the end zone.
It was up through 97, I believe, because in 98 we had the logo change where we went with,
correct,
started going with ECU and the Sabre logo on the helmet. Prior to that, even going back to like the, at least the early 80s, if not even far.
Block Pirates.
Yep, it was the Block Pirates with the shadow letters.
Yeah, gold with purple shadow. Yeah,
I have no problem with that. And
yeah,
that would look aesthetically, it just looks really dumb to have just ECU.
They forgot to fill in the rest of the end zone.
Yeah, it's like we don't have the money to pay for Pirates or to the paint, so we just put ECU like. It's almost like it's a practice or something, you know, like we're not having a real game out there.
A real game out there for the last couple of years.
Wow. Too soon?
Except for the Carolina game, maybe. There weren't too many real games played out there.
What about Old Dominion?
Old Dominion really wasn't a good team this year. They were coming off that Virginia Tech win. I enjoyed that game. I do think Old Dominion, like I said earlier, because of staff changes, I do think they're going to be a lot better.
You never count them out. And I think, again, you know, Logan used to talk about the brand names. But my God, they have a tremendous – speaking of tremendous, they have tremendous talent in the pool from those high schools. My God.
Yeah, and they fill up that little stadium, and it's packed, and it'll be – you know, Virginia Tech went up there. And that's something else, too. I'm sure we're their marquee home game this year, so they'll be fired up.
Are we going to do a road trip there?
I don't know if you can get tickets, David. That stadium only holds around 20,000. They sell it out.
You're Kyle from LaGrange. What are you talking about? You're Kyle from LaGrange.
Well,
we're subjective to get a credential.
Pick up the phone.
Well, that's true. We can get credentials. That's very good.
Yeah. Pick up the phone and say, look here, I am Kyle from LaGrange Barber. And I'm ready for my ticket, you know. And
yeah, I'll do that. I'm sure. Old Dominion is. I lost my train of thought, David. Thanks.
you blame it on me.
Yeah, it is your fault.
They'll be
a lot better this year. They're going to have us circled, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you something interesting. We're going to have this circle too. Because we got them right in the middle of two FCS opponents. So, whereas Old Dominion may be a game we would normally not be that fired up for. he will be fired up for it.
Not to mention how we had to beat them this year. I mean, we very, very barely escaped that game.
And you look at the
first game of the year with Mr. Fingerpointer breaking fingers off and stuff. Whatever his name is in Raleigh. Can't remember what's the state coach's name? Forgot it. Anyway.
It's Dave.
Got the right first name, but the wrong last name. But anyway.
So you'd rather be the head coach in NC State?
No, I can tell you, I can treat people a lot better than he does, but that's a whole other podcast. And you got to see his personality at the press conference. So that's the real him. So at least he's being authentic. I'll give him that.
Well, he was one of conference boys, so what do you expect?
Yeah. So anyway, moving on. Hey, let's talk to a guy. Let's actually talk to an ECU guy that we had. Bubba and I had fun talking to him on Monday. And Kyle, we've got to look out for this guy because they've done very well. The marquee sport, as he talked about, for women's sports is women's golf. They've been tremendous. And let's talk now to ECU alum and golfer himself and pro, and that would be Kevin Williams. And let's go to that interview right now. Another great guest, Bubba, I know on the line with us, another great coach who's been here with the Pirates and playing and then coaching. And who do we have today?
We're very excited to have Coach Kevin Williams with us. Kevin's an ECU alum from back in the mid-'80s, and then he's spent more than two decades guiding Pirate golf programs, first the men and now the women. So, Kevin, well, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks, Bubba, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Coach. I wanted to ask you out of the gate, I absolutely love golf. I'm terrible at it. In fact, I joke with people that I give hackers a bad name. I'm like chasing a ball, a white or whatever color ball around. It's very good exercise for us. But I know that you've had a lot of tremendous success. For one of the people don't realize, I think, how great our men's and women's program has been over the years, right?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously coaching the women's team now, and we've been very successful with our women's program. We've been to the NCAA tournament 9 of the last 11 years. And I tell our girls when we, our first meeting every year, I said, we're the women's flagship program of our athletic department. And I don't say it to downplay anybody else as much as to let them take pride in the fact that we're the only program that's accomplished that much on the national level. And to take that much pride in what this program has done, obviously it's not something you're going to hear much about. And I get that, and I have no problems with that. But they need to know what they're playing for and what they're representing, the women that played before them that set the standard. And, you know, I think you see that with Cliff Goblin with baseball, with when he played with Keith LeClair and you know, the standard that was set. And even before the Keith, you know, with Gary Overton and Hal Baird and our program throughout the years. And so, you know, teaching them a little bit about what the success we've had. You know, obviously the ones on the team now have played a large part in that as well. But that's what we try to, you know, we hang our hat on that. We hang our hat on that when we recruit. Talking about the success we've had nationally, and our national reputation is something that we take a lot of pride in.
Being the fact that it's East Carolina, your alma mater, do you find yourself putting more pressure on yourself because it's your alma mater versus if you were at another school where it would be important to you, but it's not your alma mater?
You know, I don't think so. I think the thing that the most pressure is, I started the program back in 2000. I was coaching both the men's and women's programs. And we started the program that year, and I was the first coach, and I've coached it for all but a year and a half of the program's existence. And I think just the pressure of trying to maintain a certain level, and we feel like, in a sense, we've kind of keep tapping our head against the ceiling. We haven't reached as high as we'd like to, very similar to the baseball program not reaching Omaha. We haven't reached nationals. You know, we've had two individuals make it to nationals, but, you know, the goal is to get there as a team and be one of the 24 teams playing for a national championship at the end of May. And that's something that we feel like we're good enough that we should have made it by now. And so we're a little disappointed in that respect, but at the same time, we have something we can always work towards.
I know last year you had a great team, and unfortunately the ladies were sick, right? And you couldn't even
participate. Oh, yeah.
It was really a terrible thing.
You know, and I was on the record of saying that was our best team we've ever had. And I just knew we were going to advance. I just had this great feeling about it. We were 1 through 5. All 5 girls had shot 68 or better.
Oh my God.
During the course of the year. And, you know, that's the thing we kind of lack here at times at East Carolina in a lot of sports is depth. And we had depth last year. And I think that was that was the tough part to it. I'm not sure if we would have advanced if we had stayed healthy, but we sure would have had a chance anyway.
And I was talking to Jeff Charles about hiring a football coach and athletic director at the same time he'd ever seen it. I don't think I'd ever seen it in East Carolina. It may have happened before, but he said, Dave, if you've been around long enough, you've seen about everything. That's something I'd never seen. I was so excited for following the program and to see the women get there. And I know the success you've had and being a great coach. And I was so disappointed for the ladies and certainly for you. I know how it is when all the hard work and effort, I don't think people realize, Bubba does because he's played. If you've ever played or coached, you know how the behind the scenes of people, maybe that's a good thing and a bad thing, yeah. that they don't see. But I felt very bad for you last year.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I'm not sure what was worse, the year we were leading regionals and didn't make it or last year not having a chance. I felt, to be honest with you, the one that we were leading and didn't make regionals back in 2007, that lingered all summer. I think this year, just the fact that we couldn't help it. I mean, it was not like we couldn't finish the tournament, therefore we weren't able to have a chance. And so it was a little bit different, I think. But, yeah, it's heartbreaking for the girls and all the hard work they put in the whole year.
I know, Bubba, this year is the great thing, Coach, is that about sports, it's a brand new year. And I know, Bubba, this season, the recruiting and everything is good, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm preparing for this interview. That's what I was looking through the current roster and just looking at some of the numbers that those ladies put up last spring. And like Coach said early on, and it was interesting to hear him say that because I had not heard him say that he thought it was our best chance to advance and one of the most talented teams we've ever had. But those ladies, starting off with Dorothea Fullbridge from Oslo, Norway, talk a little bit about the current roster. You have 5 North Carolinians, and then you also have 2 from abroad, 1 from Norway, and then 1 from Australia.
Yeah, well, I mean, you started with the right name. Dorothea is probably the hardest working player I've ever had. We've had a lot of hard workers, but she's at the top. Very, very good, very talented player. If she's not a 4.0, I think she may be below a 4.0 one of the semesters, but she's, like a 3.97 GPA. So everything she does is excellence. Everything about her, I mean, her work ethic and practice, her plan. She's one of these players that you have that you want her to schedule practice because her plan for practice is exceptional. And so, you know, we do a lot of individual work with the team. We do have some team practices, but we want them to, you know, it's a very individual sport. And some players need to play more. Some players need to practice more. And Dorothea is just very diligent about her process or planning. And, you know, we're there to help her with whatever part of her plan she needs to do. And we talk about it, her goals at the beginning of every semester and what she's trying to achieve with her golf swing. And, you know, just the other day we worked on her wedges and, you know, she learned something that she'll put in play for the, you know, she'll work extremely hard on it. But she's not the longest of hitters, but she's not short either. Her thing is she's just so consistent. And that's what she brings to the table for us.
Something I noticed about Dorothea, Coach, is in last spring she had a stroke average of just over 73, which was the second in our program's history.
Yeah. And again, it's the consistency that she plays with. You never see her shoot anything really high, and her scores are always around par, it seems like. And I think her, if you would ask her, you know, is she playing at the level she wants to, she would say no. She feels like she should make more birdies with the amount of green she's hitting. So I would say birdie conversion is something that she's working on hard, and par 5 scoring. So I expect her to, you know, continue to carry us in that number one spot. And, you know, backing her up, second best player on the team is Carly Cox, senior from China Grove. And Carly, the girl that came in, not highly recruited. She transferred from JMU, averaged 79 her first year at JMU. Her first was sophomore year. First year with us, she averaged 77, was in the lineup, I think, 8 out of 10 tournaments we played in. And then her junior year, she was all conference, averaged 73 and some change, I think it was. Made the American Athletic Conference all conference team, busted into the world amateur golf rankings, just had a great year. And just as, you know, just watching her grow the last 2 years has been amazing, and real excited for the future for her. She wants to play professionally, so she's real excited to, you know, to finish off the spring and finish off her career on a high note. And you know, our goal this year, you know, all the girls, I think it's, you know, we want to win the conference tournament. We feel like we've got a great shot to win it, and this is you know, I think the way the conference is set up this year, there's a lot of evenly matched teams. It's going to be a big shootout, I think, in April. But Carly, Dortea, Kate Wall from Australia, they are all, I think their focus is let's peak at the right time and let's see if we can't win the AAC championship this year.
Coach, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is certainly when you're talking about the future for her, but what about the future for East Carolina? I was joking with Bubba. Do you have, like, frequent flyer miles with the classic? Where do you – diamond in the rough, no pun intended there.
Actually, this, I don't go over there very much. Last year was the most I'd ever been overseas, which was twice. It just kills the budget, so I don't have much budget left. Right. Everything else I have to drive to. But usually I go over once a year. It's a great chance for me to evaluate players from, like, I go to European Girls Team Championship. And it's hosted in a different country each year. It's 20 countries in Europe and the top 6 girls from each country. And so it's a great way to see, you know, players that not only are highly ranked, but see the ones that maybe aren't as highly ranked that show a lot of potential, which is a lot of the kids we recruit. And I didn't go to South Africa. We have a South African coming in. That was more of the internet. She sent us her CV and swing videos, and we got into the mix with her, talked to her a bunch. We do a lot of Skype. You know, WhatsApp is, you know, my favorite app, I think. And so we're doing a lot of conversations with them. And, you know, the nice thing about golf is obviously it's a number. And so it's easy to compare numbers. It's different like football. You've got, you know, you're playing against other people a lot of times. But golf, swimming, you know, track, I mean, you know, 100-meter dash and track. I mean, you know, the numbers don't lie, do they? And so that's a nice thing for us. Rick Kobe, retired swimming coach, and I used to talk about that. You know, numbers help us as far as recruiting is concerned. And then it's about, you know, kind of learning more about the student athlete. And you got to make contacts with people that may know them other than the family. And so that's kind of what we did with Simone Henriquez from South Africa. There's actually a girl that plays at the University of Memphis who's a senior this year who's from South Africa. And I must have spent 30 minutes talking to her at the conference championship last year about Simone. And I just liked everything she said about her. And so, you know, that was really good. The German girl, Caroline Hermes, is finished second in the stroke play to British girls 2 years ago. So very talented. You know, just it's one of those things you kind of get lucky. She just liked the stuff we sent her. We're on the East Coast, which I think a lot of Europeans like. You know, it's a shorter flight. And so she visited Fresno State, Kennesaw State, and us, and selected our team. And then we got really lucky with a girl from Norway. And Dorotea really helped us with her. She's actually the highest ranked of the three girls coming in. And she's just a late bloomer that just kind of got into the mix late with recruiting. And, you know, nowadays when you're kind of late to the scene recruiting-wise, you know, most teams, good teams, already have their kids. And so we were able to get Oda and for not what you normally have to get an international kid for scholarship-wise. But, you know, obviously we're going to take care of her, you know, down the road. But we're excited to have, you know, such a big, you know, signing class of three is big for golf. And to have the talent level, the girls coming in, we're really excited about.
This coming spring here in, I guess, about – a little over 2 months, I should say, at the end of March. I believe this is your fifth and final event prior to the American Championships down in Florida. You're playing in an event hosted by Wake Forest at Bryan Park. And that's one that me and some family friends of ours, a guy that you're very familiar with, Tommy Clayton from Roxborough, and then also Hal Medlin from down in Benson. We're trying to make plans to attend that event, Coach.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to seeing y'all. I remember last time we played there, y'all were there. Tommy was wearing some socks. I'm not sure if I can describe them well on, on the phone, so I won't try. But I think if anybody knows TC, they know probably what they look like. So,
yeah.
Just great. The girls love that because if you think about it, when they go to tournaments, usually the only people watching them are their family members. So occasionally we'll have if we're in a town that has a pirate or two, we may see them come out for a couple holes or something, or just watch us tee off. But yeah, it means a lot to them to have people come, especially, you get an international kid whose family's not going to be there, like Kate Law and Dortea. And it's pretty neat when our administration people come and watch us play. A lot of times they'll follow those girls just so they'd have a spectator watching them play, which is really nice.
Something else, Coach.
Schedule, Coach, about this year as far as the spring schedule. What do you have coming up that we could the Pirate fans, we can come out and see some of the tournaments?
Well, we start in 2 weeks in Orlando. UCF hosts a really strong field at Eagle Creek. That's February 3rd through the 5th. The next week, Purdue University, who won the 2010 National Championship, hosts the Puerto Rico Classic, which we were lucky to get in last year, thanks to Coach Sapp, our men's coach. And then we go to the University of Florida's tournament, 1st of March. College of Charleston hosts an event third week of March. And then we go to Wake Forest's event the end of March. So that's kind of where we're playing this spring. I told the girls in our first meeting at the beginning of the spring, it's the strongest schedule we've ever played. I don't know if that's good or bad, but, you better bring it because there are no weak teams in our schedule. And I can't say that in the past. I mean, there's been tournaments in the past that we scheduled, to be honest with you, to win, to have a chance to win. If we have a chance to win any of these five this year, then we've played exceptional. And because you're talking about Orlando's tournament's got three or four top 25 schools, every one of them do. And I think so we're real excited about the challenge that we have with the schedule we're playing this spring. It's just like we're up to the challenge.
Coach, I'm originally from Lexington, but I'm currently living in China Grove, so I found that very interesting. the girls, in addition to Carly Cox, you've already talked about her, but Catherine Carson, she's from Mooresville, and then also it's Grace Yatawara.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe I'm saying that correctly. She's from Salisbury High School. So right here, no more than 10 miles up the road. With those three ladies on the team, I noticed in years past that you had played in an event at Irish Creek, which is no more than 5 miles from my house.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. Maybe you can get that on the schedule back in the future.
Yeah, they don't have it now, but that is, it's great to play. Like going to Greensboro this year, I'm real excited about it because of the fact that it allows family members and Pirates to come out and watch us play. And so, but yeah, Irish Creek would be great with all the Mecklenburg County people we have on our team.
That's really
no doubt. Huge Pirate contingent here in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, Coach. I know, Bubba, you wanted to talk about the fall schedule too with the Hurricanes, right?
Yeah, and just noticing, I think we had at least one event, maybe two events canceled, and I can only imagine the havoc that it wreaked with practice being hit by two hurricanes, Florence and Michael.
Yeah, so our home event got canceled, and it's interesting. We started at Minnesota. We had a chance to win the tournament. We were one stroke back with one round to play, and we finished third. But we beat a team, Oklahoma, who's ranked 22, 23 in the country right now, and beat a lot of good teams. And I was, real excited. Actually, we might have finished fourth, but it was just a great finish. A lot of momentum, played really well. And then the next week was supposed to be our home tournament, which got canceled. And our home tournament, it's weak. The field's not very strong. We're going to win that tournament. We're going to beat the 15 schools that are there. Our girls are probably going to play well because we're playing on a home course. and you know, you just feel good about yourself. Y'all know, I mean, you can't, I mean, I'll never forget Jeff Jagodzinski sitting in my office and Scales saying, hey, look, we want to play Ohio or somebody like that. We don't want to play Virginia Tech as a coach because we want to win and to get ready for conference. And it's kind of interesting hearing that because as a fan, I want them to play the Virginia Techs. But as a coach, you're like, and, you know, I want something to make our kids feel good about and have some momentum. Maybe we can work on some things. And that's what our home tournament afforded us. And so we didn't. Well, I guess we were gone for like 10 days on campus with practice. Everybody kind of went home. The international kids went home with some of the girls on the team. And then when we came back, we went to Chicago and finished last. And it, great field, strong field, but, I mean, we just did not play well at all. And we played a little bit better the last two tournaments of the fall, but just not up to our standard. And I think looking back on it now, just the momentum was pretty much sucked out of us because of the hurricane and not being able to play our home tournament and get some more competition rounds in and, you know, feeling good about ourselves.
Oh, Coach, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we've hosted at least one regional, right? Or am I thinking about the men?
No, we hosted the 2010 regional. We hosted at Ironwood, and we were supposed to host the 2017 regional at Ironwood, and that's when the HB2 wall made them change it. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh man, I forgot. Man, that seems like it seems like an eternity ago. I
it
forgot,
does, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. Politics, politics, and athletics—it just doesn't match.
Exactly, it does not mix. As far as what do you have to do for those of us novices as far as following the sport, ladies golf, what do you have to do to host a regional?
Well, you have to put in a bid just like for baseball or any other sport. And you actually have to bid for 3 years. So they're in the bid process now for 22, 23, and 24. And so you put in the bid. And we, like I said, we got selected before. We had put in for 17, 18, and 19, and they selected. We wanted, 16, 17, 18. We wanted to host in 16 because that was the Frieda Spang and Nico Skaw were graduating. They were seniors that year, and we had a really good team. We were finished the year 29th in the country, and we wanted to host that year. But they selected us for 17, unfortunately. And so we're haven't talked about putting a bid in yet, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, that conversation will come up in the next year or so.
We have a great before we let you go, what are your thoughts on our current AD with John Gilbert? What does he like to work with?
Well, let me just say this. I've been there 22 years, and I'm not sure if I've seen the optimism as high as I've seen it right now, with the exception of when Skip Holtz and Terry Holland were here. And I think John Gilbert seems like a wonderful, wonderful man, leader. I think Dave Hart and his involvement has been huge for us. You know, we had a tough time there for the last 3 or 4 years, and it's so nice to have John on board and leading us. And I think Mike Houston is going to do a great job. I mean, all you have to do is walk around the athletic campus and see Donnie Kirkpatrick smiling like crazy, and it makes you feel good. I think he and Shank are just, they can't contain their excitement for being back. And, you know, let's be honest, that spreads to everybody. You know, that enthusiasm and that feel good. I mean, Mike and his staff are so upbeat and so nice and so welcoming, and John, and you know, obviously we've hired Ron Robinson and Carolyn, you know, as new staff members. And it's just, I think the attitude around the athletic department is just tremendous right now. I'm real excited.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to meet Ryan Robinson yet, but I've been very impressed with him as well, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, very. Yeah, he's a golfer. He was quick to tell me that, which is great. And but he seems very upbeat, personable, and I think, you know, if you follow him on Twitter or anything else, you'll see he's pretty active in promoting East Carolina athletics, which is great.
No doubt, Coach. You've been you've given us a lot of your time, and I appreciate it very much. And I'm very excited about the season and. Certainly with the ladies, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for not only spending time with us, but I wanted to say publicly, thank you for all you do for for the ladies' golf team. You put a lot of time in and effort and many years here in East Carolina, so thank you for what you do.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave and Bubba. Thanks. I look forward to seeing you guys in Greensboro in March, okay?
He was tremendous, a lot of fun. I know that he spent a lot of time with us, and certainly he never wants – I'll tell you one thing, don't ever give me some golf clubs and expect to win. I'm terrible at golf. I love it. I'm one a guy to cheer you guys on the sidelines, but I'm terrible at golf. So I know, Kyle, you'll be with us in the golf cart, right?
Will we playing putt-putt?
Hey, sounds good to me. I'm better at that. I'm way better at that than actual golf. So,
yeah, exactly.
I can hold my own there, but I'm terrible at regular golf. I chase golf balls around. It's good exercise, and I love the outdoors. And I think golf courses are absolutely gorgeous. And I am very. I look up to golfers because there's. I think if I played more, maybe I would be better. But I hope
I'll be. I'll be at the clubhouse with the wife, drinking a Bloody Mary. Thanks.
All right, there you go, and there you go in the clubhouse. All right, so we've got a lot of things to talk about.
Whatever you call it at golf, what do you call that? Is it a clubhouse?
The clubhouse.
No, I don't play golf.
All right.
Something I wanted to say, Dave. Earlier, we were talking about the excellent community service work that our football, baseball, and women's tennis programs. It was the Rise Against Hunger. I was when you threw it to me there. I was satisfying my hunger, so I wasn't exactly expecting to be talking about that. But that was the Rise Against Hunger.
All right,
Rise Against Hunger. Okay. Well, who does that food go to, though? Who does the Rise Against Hunger distribute the food to? Is it for the homeless or is it for children? Or do y'all know? I mean,
I have not delved that deep into it. No.
More research, Bubba. More research.
More research.
All right, you can come back to us later. We'll figure it out between now and the next podcast. Speaking of which, I know that we have some more. If you haven't had a chance, you've got to listen to the 83 podcast, right, Bubba and Kyle?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, part one and part two are both great. And there's more to come. Yeah, Bubba, tell them about it.
Yeah, volumes one and two have – especially volume one, because volume two was just released last night. But volume one has an excellent response so far. I know Amos Adams, who we're going to be having on in the coming days, he and his brothers, Calvin and Stefan, the three of them were on that 83 team. And very unusual that you see three brothers on one Division I football team, but that was the case on the 1983 Pirates. So we'll be catching up with those guys. And Amos just said how awesome it was to hear his teammates describing that memorable 83 season.
Yeah, and guys, on part two that just came out today, to all our listeners out there in podcast land, check out part two. There's some interesting stuff on there, particularly – maybe if you're from that 91 era or you have some friends from that 91 team, or if you're, you know, if you're a player from that 91 team, check out the part two of our 83 podcast, particularly towards the end. There may be a part of there you guys find interesting. So check that out. Just check that
rivalry.
Out. A little rivalry.
Yeah, talking junk, talking smack. It's amazing. Right. Which is the, I guess, the ultimate question. Hey, that's a great, hey, Bubba. That's a great thing that just came to me on Twitter and Facebook. Let's do a poll. What is the best, and I'm not going to, we don't have to, we could do that, maybe argue that, and maybe that's a podcast we can do for maybe in the summer. What is the best Pirate team of all time football? So maybe.
We're going to have choices? What are our choices? 83 or 91? Or are we going to have other choices?
78, 93, 91.
09.
Yeah, let's put those four choices up.
What about 2013? We won 10 games.
I know. I mean, you want to put five choices? I mean, which would you rather have, 09 or 2013? The other three are locked in.
Well, I put them both.
You want to put five choices up there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, Bubba, can you do that?
What about the 95 Liberty Bowl?
What about 96? They should have been in a bowl.
You could argue that 95 Liberty Bowl team and the 96 team is better than half the teams we just named. I mean, you've just created the mess here, David. Good job.
Or you could keep
it simple. Let's make it simple. Greatest pirate team of all time, 83 or 91. You got two choices. We're a communist nation.
All right, so there you go. And a few plays away from being 11-0 from the 83 team, and you have the 11-1.
Yeah, because if you do that, like you said, the 78 team, you said they're a lock. Well, hell, I mean, you could say the 95 team's a lock. They won the freaking Liberty Bowl against Stanford.
No, I know. I'm not saying there's an only.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
So let's just say 83 or 91, and so okay. Just a two-team poll, and choose which team was better.
All right.
83 or 91. So, Bubba, get on that.
I think, I will say this before we go. I'm going to say that it's going to come down to the generation, because my generation would probably say 91, but the older folks are probably going to say 83. I think it's going to be – it'd be interesting to see. Can you put your age beside your – I'm just kidding. Beside your vote.
Bubba, can you write a software for Facebook so we can do this?
Gender, let's see, not gender, but the demographics is what I meant. So anyway, Bubba, what else do we have? I know that we have those coming up. We have the AAF. We've got a great podcast coming up there. That's going to be coming up. The new league.
The Alliance of American Football.
Yeah, that'll be kicking off on February 9th, so we'll catch up with three guys that have ECU ties, a former athletics administrator in charge of marketing, Greg Herring. He's now with the Memphis Express. And then we'll also catch up with former tight end Bryce Williams and former quarterback Philip Nelson.
We now have Coach Logan on. He's involved with the league.
Birmingham Iron.
Yep, offensive coordinators for the Birmingham and Iron.
Yeah. That'll be cool. We'll see if we can get on that. Yeah, well, Kyle, you're the big guy that can get the big guests. You go for it. You get Coach Logan.
That's all you, David. That's all you. That's all you.
All right. All right. So, by the way, folks, want to remind you, you can, a lot of people, thank you so much on the Facebook. A lot of people are liking our page, and make sure you do that. On Twitter, it's @TheSportsOBJ. At The Sports Objective is you can follow us there on Instagram and so much more. And don't forget to give us a 5-star review. To put something down for us on Apple Podcasts and wherever your favorite podcast
is. Yeah, guys, 5-star reviews. Even if you hate us, talk negative about us, call us all sorts of names, but just put a 5-star review with us.
That would actually be funny.
Yep.
5-star review. These guys suck, but I still gave them a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Great. All right, guys, we're going to get out of here, and we'll put this podcast to bed. I want to thank our great guests. We have John Gilbert, obviously ECU Athletic Director. Appreciate him very much. Also, Sam Raz, who is from the Scott and Holman podcast, and Kevin Williams, the ECU Women's Golf Coach. Thanks to all three guests, and thanks to Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle from McGrain's Barber. I am Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.